an amazing job. So let's applaud them. So as you know, the topic is whether work is worship or whether we work as worship. Okay. Now, okay. So we have heard these words very frequently, work and worship. But do you think work and worship are related? So we'll see how, whether they are related or is there a deeper connection, or we just say work is worship. So let's see that. Okay. How many of us believe, I want you to raise your hands if you believe that work is worship. Can we raise our hands if we believe that work is worship? Okay, thank you. How many of us believe that we can work as worship? Okay, some people raise the hands for both. Many of you have raised your hands for neither. So let's analyze what it is. Before that, you see, work is a motivating force for many great things to be done. Many motivated leaders, great personalities, they have chosen to work and then they have done great things for themselves and for the world to benefit. Why do we need to work? You know, when great people work, right, they have sets of principles, priorities and practices. And when they work with these ideals, they can benefit everyone around, right? And that really becomes something great to aspire for. Most of us, are we in that category? Do we think great? Do we have great ideals? Or are we just working for maybe some money, then some facilities to buy from that money, which may lead to success and fame? So, do we work only for these things? Or do we have to work for something beyond this? Something much more than what these facilities or small amount of money can give? Generally, let us see what are the motivating factors for anyone to work. What do you think? What makes us work? Anyone has answers? Money, okay. Identity, yeah. You said something? Success. Strong purpose, very good. So these are motivating factors too. We can also understand them as fear. You see, most of us, when we study for the exams, are we studying thinking that, okay, with this exams, when we clear, we get a good job and then we succeed? No. Most of us may be studying just out of fear. That, look, if I don't pass my exams, I will repeat this term and then that will be great loss for me. Right? So fear, if you do something with fear, it will neither benefit you, nor it will benefit any other. Right? So fear is the least motivating factor to work. But still, nevertheless, sometimes we work out of fear, and that's at least great. I mean, it's better than not working at all, right? Second is desire. When we have a desire to do something good, right, we may work. That's great. But then sometimes when we really are desirous of something, we really don't bother about what others think or what others feel. Just to achieve our desires, just to accomplish our goals, we may trample on others and then succeed. So is that really good? Not really, right? The third motivating factor could be duty. Like you saw in this wonderful drama, the teacher comes as a duty, teaches and goes. Well, that's quite good. It's much better than the other two forms, that is fear and desire. But the best motivating factor which drives many wonderful and great people to work is, any guesses? Any guesses? It makes the world go round and round. Love. Okay? So, love is something which will really motivate people to do their best. Right? How many of us have given holidays to our mothers? How many of us have seen our mothers take a break or a vacation or a gap. No. They work 24 into 7, right? For little babies, when we were really small, our mothers would get up in the middle of the night to change our diapers, right, to feed us. And we didn't say, thank you, Mama. Did we say that? Mama, thank you. No. We just kept crying and crying and crying and making her get up again and again, right? So the mother is bound by love to do the things, and that is really the greatest motivating factor for all of us to work. We have to come to that stage, right? So from fear to desire to duty, and then maybe love for what we are doing. So having understood the motivating factors, let's understand why do we say that work is worship is not so good. Many of us believe that work is worship, but it's not really the best thing. Let's try to analyze. And that's why we say we should work as worship and not think that work is worship. So let's analyze this aspect. Why work is worship is not really the truth. It can be motivating. You see, many people who say that work is worship, they really work hard. They achieve great things, right? But that's not the end of it. These people also give dignity to various types of labor, right? Whatever the work done, they give dignity, they give respect to their job, and that's really wonderful. Like you can see the examples of Gandhiji, Vinoba Bhave. They really respected the concept of work as worship. They thought work is worship, and they really lived by it, right? Many of us have heard or even say that Bhagavad Gita says that work is worship, right? Many of us might have heard this. Many of us tell it to our friends and relatives that work is worship, and this is said in the Bhagavad Gita. Well, is it really true? In the Bhagavad Gita, nowhere is it explicitly stated that work is worship. Do you know that? The closest verse in Bhagavad Gita which comes to work is worship is 18.47, which says Swakarma tam abhyarsha. That means, by worship of the Lord who is all-pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. That means the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us that our work is a means of worshipping the Lord. It's not the worship. It's a means of worshipping the Lord. Let us understand this a little bit more in detail. If work was worship, like this mathematical equation which we have written here, work equal to worship, who would be the best worshipper of the Lord? The most hardworking creature on the planet. Ant, okay? The most hardworking, who doesn't even get B, the creature doesn't even get a reward for its work. No, the creature, the animal. Donkey. Do you agree that the donkey works the hardest? If work is worship, donkey will be the best pujari, right? But that's not true. So work is not equal to worship. Why? Because work is things of this world which we do, right? And worship deals with the Lord. Okay? Worship is a means of praying to the Lord, communicating with the Lord. So work is really not equal to worship. If work is not equal to worship, can we integrate the two? Is it possible? Let's see that. Integration is possible. How? In the heart. Now you'll ask me, how do we integrate in the heart? Okay. A heart gives us the desire to do some meaningful work, right? Whether we are a student, a mother, a teacher, a family member, a sister, something in our heart tells us that we need to do good. So that's the desire which comes from the heart. Similarly, the heart is the seat from where we get an impetus to search for something beyond. See, routinely we work, everyone works. But don't we have that intense desire in the heart that we should do something much more than just maybe the four basic necessities of human life? Yes. So the heart is a seat from where we get the impetus to work, And from where we get an impetus to go beyond the superficial things of life. So really the heart is the place where we can integrate work and worship. The Gita helps us to understand this. How? It says, whatever we do it in a mood of service. Right? So if the devotees were performing the drama, they were not doing it to exhibit their talents. They were doing it as a mood of service. If some devotees were arranging the laptop and the mic, they were not doing it thinking that, such a lowly work I have to do. No, they were doing it thinking as a service. If someone is giving the class, it's not that, I am here giving the class to so many. No, it's an act of service. So when we have that mood of service, this becomes amalgamated. Work and worship can come together, right? And it not only benefits us, it benefits everyone who's concerned, everyone who we are serving. Like, how can we make work as worship? Okay, when we say work is not equal to worship, but we can make work as worship, we should understand that every one of us is a child of God. Do we understand that? If we understand that, there will be no problems actually. We will treat everyone equally, we will treat everyone very respectfully, right? And we'll think that the entire world is a family of the Lord, right? And we are related. If you work in an office, thinking that everyone is my colleague, everyone is my sibling, can we fight at work? No, we will never fight. And even if there's some competition, we'll understand that, okay, it should be good, it should be done in a healthy way to achieve something better, right? If we are in a managerial position, say in a leadership position in an organization, it's good to understand that everyone is a child of God and we should serve together. But you know, nowadays in corporate circles, there's a terminology called as servant leadership. Sounds very intriguing, right? Servant leadership. You can be a leader, how can you be a servant? Can you imagine someone leading the, if there's a rally, someone leading the rally and then also sweeping the floor or sweeping the roads as he is leading? Sounds very contradictory. But the foundation, the philosophical and the intellectual foundation of this principle, which is nowadays being used in many of the corporate circles, is coming from the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita says that no matter what position you are in, you are first a parcel of the Lord, a part and parcel of the Lord, a living entity. And second, you are supposed to serve others. So whatever position, if I am a housewife, I am a servant to my family. If I am a child, I am a servant to my parents. If I am a school teacher, I am a servant to my students. If I am a president or a king, I am a servant to my praja. So no one is barred. Everyone is a servant. With that understanding, if you work, there is no way you can trample upon others. There is no way you can push down others to lead, right? So that's the concept of servant leadership, where you think that I'm a servant and that's how I will lead everyone in the most righteous way. If a manager uses this principle, what will happen? They will have the best work output because they are working with the right consciousness, right? Their talents are an expression of love. It is not just some mundane work that we do. It's an expression of love, right? The team works as a team, right? And they grow. It's not just that they finish their work and then they are separate apart. They will grow, work as a team and they will grow as a team. And believe me, the most impossible tasks can be achieved when you have this concept of servant leadership. That means you can achieve the greatest things when you work in a united way, knowing that we are there just to help each other. Okay? Arjuna, he was on the battlefield. Before the battle began, you know what state he was in? He was in utter anxiety. He was clueless as to what he is supposed to do, right? He had so many doubts. He approached the Lord with all his doubts, got them clarified. He was in a most difficult situation. Do you think Arjuna could have worked as a fighter? No, he was not in a position. His hands were trembling. He couldn't lift his bow. And then when his queries got clarified, he used the most difficult profession of an army person or a soldier or the leader of an army to fight the battle and give the credit to the Lord. Right? So we can see the transformation of Arjuna from a confused warrior to someone who did great things for the Lord's service. So if Arjuna can do it, do you think you and me can be spared? Or do you think you and me cannot take inspiration from Arjuna? Do we have such situations in our work that, you know, everyone is trying to kill us? We have to kill our own family members or our best friends at work? No. No one has that situation. So ideally, if we follow this principle of working as worship, no setting is too extreme for us to see it as an area of service, right? We can do the best service with that mood. We can convert any job into the best profession. We can now imagine when you go to the office, many days, I don't know, maybe you can share your experiences. How many of us feel that when you go to the office, it's like a desert, you know? You can't see any drop of water. It's just people parched up and you don't feel any energy to work and you feel, oh, where do I have come? Where have I come? Do you feel like that sometimes? Especially on Monday mornings? Okay. So these deserts, which are like emotion sapping areas of competition, we can convert them into oasis. What is an oasis? In a desert, you don't find even a drop of water. You can go miles and miles and miles and you will just be thirsty and maybe you will die because of thirst. There's not a drop of water. But in the desert, there are some places which are called as oasis, where you have some small pools of water which will really nourish you and make you happy. It will quench your thirst and you can really be rejuvenated. So these offices, which we see as, you know, dried up deserts, we can convert them into oasis of what? Of emotionally fulfilling performances. Not just emotion sapping competitions, but emotionally fulfilling performances. So if we really want to convert the desert of our workplace into an oasis of emotionally fulfilling experiences and performances, we need some practical tips, right? We can't just say, okay, Arjuna did it, let me also do it. We can do it, but then we need some practical tips. So let's look into some of the practical tips. There are two main ways which we can do it. Actually, how many of us are working here? Okay, quite a good number. That means it will help us. I mean, me too. So it will help me also. So the important ideas are, we need to spiritualize our working environment. Okay, where we work, we need to spiritualize that. Let's see. Do we do it just by, you know, putting some incense and ringing some bell? Or there's something beyond that. So we need to spiritualize our work environment. And we will need to spiritualize our profession or our vocations, whatever we do. So let's touch upon the first aspect, spiritualizing our work environment. Now, you see, most of us, when we are following some path, religious path, or some principles, when we go into our work areas, how many of you have the experience that when you go into your workplace, people consider you as a role model of spirituality? They respect you, they want to learn from you, and they really look up to you. How many of us have this experience? Not many? Yeah, there are some hands raised. So when you are following a spiritual life, people know that you are doing something good, and they look up to you for some ideas, for some encouragement, right? Now, can it be that I am representing some great ideals, but I am not following it myself? Will it serve any purpose? We have a small video, a little bit funny video. Let's see how it will help us understand that we need to practice what we preach. Okay. If it plays, it's great. Otherwise, I'll tell you what the video contains. No. No, I think we can't play this. Okay. So I'll just tell you some examples which are shown in this video. This video is about a few people who say that they follow God, but they are not living up to the ideals. Like example, there is this person who is appointed as the sorry for the technical difficulties here. Okay. So there's this person who says that he's a great believer of God and he can do great things, and he's appointed as the bodyguard of a person, of another person, of a corporate leader. Okay? And then the corporate leader, on the first day of the job, he asks him, "So, are you ready for your job?" The person says, "Yes, yes, I'm a Christian and I know great ideals of sacrifice and selflessness and so on and so forth." And just as he's saying this, there's a van which comes, and there are some goons coming out of the van and shooting at others. And this person who's appointed as the bodyguard, what he does, he says, "Well, I'm taught that others should be first, so you go ahead." And he takes the boss ahead and he is hiding behind the boss. Will it serve? No. He's just speaking of selflessness and sacrifice and he doesn't want to follow it. Okay? Then there's another example where the person, he's leading a group of small group of people into a picnic, okay? And then they get lost. They can't find their way in the forest. So they are just searching and going on marking trees on their way so that, you know, they don't come across that path again. And then they see that there's this one particular tree which they have already covered 5 times. That means they have touched the tree, marked it, gone around and then come back and marked it again and again and again. Like that 5 times they have marked it. And the followers, they say, "We are frustrated, you know. We can't see that we are reaching any end." And this person says, "Do you think this really matters, that we have to come out of the forest? Do you really know what will happen to you when you die? We need to think of something beyond material life. We need to enter the spiritual life." And just then they hear a shrill sound of a wolf. And what do you think this leader does? The spiritual leader, he runs off. Leaving them the positions, he just runs off. That is not what we are trying to do, right? We want to practice what we preach. We don't want to be just show bottles, right? So if we are role models of spirituality, we need to follow what we are preaching. We need to follow what we imbibe or what we believe in, right? So, but when we go to our workplaces, we say that we need to work as worship, but then sometimes we say that our offices have become warship. They have become places of war, where we think that everyone is making strategies. You see, we see people around and we say, "Oh, here, she is making up strategies to pull me down. Oh, there, he's trying to do something so that he gets a promotion and I'm left behind, right? So we have all these ideas about people, and forget all those external things. We have our own internal and external battles to fight, right? So in the midst of all this, do you think we can really worship the Lord through our work? Difficult. If you try to analyze, most of these thoughts that we have about others is actually like a projection of our own mind, right? We think that people are like this. We think someone is doing like this. Actually, there's nothing like that. And even if that is, why do we have to worry if we are honest, right? So if we clear our minds of these misconceptions, the same war fields, warships, we can see them as a wonderful exhibition. You see, when we go to an art gallery, right, you can see different paintings, handicrafts, right? And we see that all these are talents which these people have used to make some beautiful things, right? So even if we understand that, you know, things are only in our mind and we really need to face people for what they represent, we will see that the office is a beautiful exhibition where everyone is showing their talents for the benefit of each other and for the organization, right? We have our own external and internal battles to fight, which is much more difficult than the others, than facing others. What are those? External battles, competition. Okay, it's not moving ahead. Actually, or maybe we can just continue like that because, Haji? I think it's okay. We can see it on the slide. That's okay. Yeah, that's okay. Video, I can't see. That's okay. Mm-hmm. No, it's okay. I can manage. Yeah, that's it. Okay? Yeah. Thank you. So the external battles, as you can see, are competition, comparison, peer pressure, strained relationships amongst each other, and difficulty to appreciate. The internal battles are procrastination. We often postpone our things, na? What is that? Kal kare so aaj kar, aaj karo so ab. But we do it other ways. What is it? Aaj kare so kal, kal kare to parso. I don't recollect the later part. Ab to jeena hai. Itni bhi kya jaldi hai yaro, ab to jeena hai barso. So procrastination, motivation, concentration and stability. So we look into each of these. Competition. When we have a healthy competition, it's good. But when we have an unhealthy competition, what is it? It's like this cactus. You know, cactus plant? If you hold it, it will hurt you. And if you poke it at others, it will hurt them. So healthy competition is needed, not a unhealthy competition. So if we have an unhealthy competition, that's like a cactus. But if we have a healthy competition, it's like a smooth razor blade, which will shave off the hair, unwanted hair, very smoothly, won't even see any trace of hair. So we need to have a healthy sense of competition. Comparison. You know, comparison, when we compare with others, it's like we are cursing ourselves for our uniqueness. Everyone has a unique ability to do things which others can't do. And if we are cursing ourselves, if we are cursing our uniqueness, that is comparison. Have you ever seen an elephant cursing itself or getting angry that, oh, I can't use my tusks to eat my food? No. Have you ever seen a shark saying, how I wish I had beautiful tusks for showing it to others? No. If they are not cursing themselves or if they are not unhappy, why are we unhappy? Why are we comparing? So comparison can be overcome by gratitude. If we are grateful for what we have, we will never compare ourselves with others, right? Peer pressure. You know, this clay, when a potter, he molds the clay is soft, right? And the potter just needs to use his hands to mold the clay into any shape that he wants, right? Now, if you have a mountain, a huge mountain, do you think some hands can mold that mountain? No. For a mountain, if you need to break it, what do you need? You need bombs, you need dynamites, right? So, when we have a huge mountain of our ideals in front of them, in front of us, that means our ideals should be so high that a few hands of peers cannot mold us, right? So our mountains of our ideals should be very huge so that no one can affect us, right? Strained relationships. Why do we have strained relationships? Because we're expecting from each other. When we expect, we don't get it back. That is where the problem arises, right? So we should rather just do our duty and forget that someone has to reciprocate with us. If they reciprocate, that's great. But we need to reciprocate with them, but we should not expect. So that will keep us happy. Appreciation. How much of us can really appreciate people for what they do? Most of us are haji ma'am persons, right? Haji sir, haji ma'am. Because we do it because so that we can get some benefits out of it. So that is called as flattery. It is not appreciation. It is haji haji. That is flattery. And real appreciation is something else. So what is the difference? Flattery, you use your tongue to speak. And you speak some words, right? And it just caresses, maybe it just strokes our mind and ego. You feel so good. Oh, someone has said something so nice about me. Whereas, if you really need to appreciate someone, you need to use your eyes to see. You need your ears to listen to them. You need your heart to analyze. And you need your tongue to really speak from your heart. Right? And this type of appreciation when you do, it will not just, you know, caress the mind and ego. It will go and straight touch the heart. Right? So it said that what comes from the heart, what comes from the head, goes above the head, and what comes from the heart goes into the heart, right? So we need to be flattering people? No. We need to be appreciating people and not just do flattery. And also, when we eat the fruit of flattery, it will only intoxicate us and weaken us. Whereas if we eat the fruit of appreciation, it will encourage us, it will enthuse us, and it will nourish us, right? So we need to appreciate people and not just go into flattery. That's our external battles, right? How we deal with peer pressure, how we deal with comparison, how we deal with competition. What about our internal battles? What are they? As we saw, procrastination, motivation, right? Procrastination, motivation, concentration, and stability. How do we help these? Okay, procrastination. You know, this is a very nice statement which I read about. Okay, it said that the procrastination, which we just said, it's like a funeral pyre which burns down all our chances of success. Can you believe this? When we procrastinate things, we are burning our own tools of success, right? So we have to understand the consequences of what will happen if we procrastinate, and we have to make this knowledge our best friend. Then we will not procrastinate any longer, right? Motivation. If I do, how many of us do things because we need to do them? or how many of us do things because we are told to do them, right? So if we do things which we need to do, which I want to do, it's like an enzyme, self-generated enzyme, which will help the, like, you know, food, if it has to be digested, enzymes are there and they are self-generated. But if we have to do which someone else has told us to do, it's like an injected steroid. Doesn't serve much, right? So it said that you discover your life and motivation will seek you. So we have to discover our life, we have to discover what we like, and motivation will automatically follow. Concentration. Have you seen, maybe on National Geographic, how a lion chases its prey? You know, like in this picture you can see huge buffalo-like creatures, right? And the lion is easily able to pounce upon the buffalo or this deadly-looking creature. How? The lion is not very strong compared to that animal, right? The lion is not very fast also. But the lion concentrates on one prey at a time. Because it's able to concentrate on one prey at a time, no matter how many animals are there running here and there, it will concentrate on that one particular prey and catch upon it, right? And pounce upon it. So that's its success formula, right? That's the concentration which helps us. So concentration, how do we get it? It's a product of active patience with a task or problem at hand. If we have constant patience with a task at hand, we will be able to achieve the concentration which is required to do. Stability. How do we maintain our stability in success and failure? You see, sometimes when we do great things, we are elated. And when we get a firing from the boss, we are really depressed. Right? So, yeah, this child here is very proud of his success. Okay? And you know, it said that if you're proud of your success, you are like an orphan. No one wants you. Because you are so much swelling up with pride, no one wants to look at you. And when you are depressed with failures, you are like a beggar. You are just asking, de. You are asking for sympathy. Okay? We don't want to be an orphan. We don't want to be a beggar. Right? When we understand that our success is just a small ingredient in a big recipe. Like, see, when you make a recipe, when you make a dish, you need so many ingredients, right? So if you are just one of those ingredients, say I am the mirch or say I am the jeera powder, can I take success? I made such a nice methi malai matar. No. I can just say, I was the jeera powder and maybe so many things helped to make that dish. So when we understand that our success or the company's success is not because of my own talents, I am just an ingredient in that huge recipe, we will remain humble. Right? Similarly, when we are depressed because of our failures, we should understand, you know how a diamond gets polished, how it sparkles? It undergoes a rigorous process of polishing, where it is cut, it is sharpened, right? It is a very painful process for the diamond. If we understand that our failures are just a way of getting polished, that will give us hope. That no matter how many difficult situations in my life, I will shine out as the best diamond, right? So, humility, we need humility and we also need hope to go ahead. So that's about spiritualizing our work environment, how we can help deal with others, how we can fight our own internal and external battles. How about spiritualizing our professions or our vocations? I may be a teacher, I may be a sweeper, I may be an accountant, I may be a doctor, I may be a lawyer, I may be a student, I may be an athlete. Do you think all this can be used in the God service? Yes. We need to understand how we can do that. So, we need to understand that our talents and abilities are special mercy or special abilities which are given as a grace of the Lord to us. We don't have anything which we have made. All that we possess is the grace of God coming through Him, right? When we understand that, we will understand the importance, we will understand the value and we will use them. And we should understand that these talents are given just for me to serve the Lord, right? We can redirect our emotions. We can redirect all our emotions in the service of the Lord. You know, if a hand is hungry, can we just leave some paneer pieces on the hand and say, here you go, feed yourself? No. We need to put the paneer pieces into our mouth, from where it goes to the stomach, gets digested, and then the hand feels energetic, right? Similarly, if we serve the Lord, who is the foundation for all our existence, just by serving the Lord and worshipping Him in a nice way, but just by serving the Lord and making Him the goal of our life, we too can succeed. We too can really be happy. With these emotions, with these understanding, we can have an integrating vision, a unifying vision, which will help us understand that work can be used as worship. And when we work in such a way, it becomes an offering of love to the Lord. It is no longer just work. It is an offering of our heart's love to the Lord. Let's see some examples. Have you heard of these great personalities? Savta Mali, Gora Kumbhar. Savta Mali, he was a gardener. Gora Kumbhar was a potter. And they were engaging themselves in the service of the Lord, Lord Vitthal Dev. Right? Mother Teresa, she used all her compassion to serve the needy, to serve the most diseased, right? We need to see some real examples, real life examples from ISKCON also. George Harrison, have you heard about him? He was a very famous musician, singer from a band called as the Beatles. You know, Beatles was a very famous rock band in the 1960s, right? And this person was very famous. People would die for even a glance of him. Right? Like today's maybe Virat Kohli or any new actor, people die for their glances. So was George Harrison. And when he met Srila Prabhupada, he was transformed. Right? And whatever he did as a profession, he used it for the service of the Lord. He didn't change his profession. He used to write songs. He still wrote songs. But all those songs were in glorification of the Lord, to serve the Lord and make people, inspire people to get the feelings of loving God, right? Like here I've just quoted one. If you open up your heart, you will know what I mean. We have been polluted so long, but here's a way for you to get clean. By chanting the names of the Lord and you will be free, the Lord is awaiting on you all to awaken and see. So many wonderful poems he wrote, many wonderful songs he wrote, so much so that in the United Kingdom, Hare Krishna became a household word. Everyone knew that. And they were telecasted live on the most popular channels of the country so many times. Right? Coming to, again, if we need to extrapolate this into real life today, today's day and age, I'll just give you a small, maybe half a minute exercise. Just think of any song which is your favorite. Not devotional song, it can be a movie song, sports song, which is your favorite. Just think of that. Have you thought of it? You don't need to tell me. Just think, what is your favorite song? Think in your heart. Okay? Try to understand those words and try to see those words and put the character, replace the character which the song is devoted to with God. Can you understand the activity? Any song which you love, okay? Every song is devoted to a personality, right? Maybe the lover, wife, or favorite sports person, right? Now you try to move the focus from this person who the song is dedicated to God. Just see how much sense it makes. Those same words will help you understand how deep God's love is. How, if we can really connect those words to God, we will understand that Lord's love is so deep. That means we are using those feelings which we are ideally supposed to connect to the Lord, and we are bringing out to a very low level just to connect with some person on this earth. That's really foolish, actually. The real feelings of the heart which come from, real feelings which come from the heart, which are supposed to be dedicated to the Lord, you are bringing them down to some creature of this world. So, but George Harrison, he knew the purpose of his songs. He dedicated all the songs, all the lyrics to the Lord. And that's how he was still popular. He could change millions of hearts across the globe. His Holiness Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj. He was a scientist. Can you believe? A scientist, and he used his knowledge of science to propagate love of God. So many interfaith conferences, he was the main speaker. And he was nourishing, he was inspiring scientists to become God conscious. That is picture of Maharaj. Alfred Ford, very rich industrialist. But when he came in touch with Prabhupada, he used all his money in the service of the Lord. He's still using his money in the service of the Lord. Peter Burwash, he was a very famous tennis player. And now he is a very famous life coach for so many organizations. So just to summarize, there's something called as a push and pull strategy. Okay? So if you want to push someone, what will happen? That person will go down, but you will also go down. Because you're pushing the person down, you will go down. But if you really want to pull someone, you will pull that person up and you will also be elevated. So try to use this principle in life. Never push anyone, try to pull them. So, strong people don't push others down, they lift them up. So we are all going to be strong people. Okay? We'll not push, but we will pull them, pull others. This is a creature called as a porcupine. Okay? It has very spiky quills. Quill? It's called quill, right? Yeah. Quills. These are very spiky. They can poke you. Okay? Now, this porcupine, in winters, many of them, they come together to avoid the cold. Okay? But when they are, you know that exercise which a teacher gave? Come closer. Like that, the porcupines come closer and closer so that they don't feel the external cold. But what's the problem? Their quills keep poking each other. But every porcupine knows, if I go out of this group, I will die in the winter. Rather, stay with the group and survive. So when we want to be happy, we need to stick together. Sometimes our egos, our problems will poke us. Others' problem will poke us. But do you want to stay together and remain warm and happy? Or you want to just wander around alone and then succumb to death? So we have to take that call. Whether we want to be together or just be diverted. So work is not equal to worship. But work can be made into worship. This is very beautiful. Get on your knees and pray, and then get up on your feet and work. Okay? And this is the best. Work for God. Why? Because the retirement benefits are very great. There's one more video which, of course, we can't show. Thank you so much. Haji? But I don't know how to play it yet. How do you play it yet?
Is it?
2 minutes, 1.5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mataji, for your wonderful presentation. It was really worth listening, right? So many practical examples she gave us. Thank you again. So we would thanks Mataji for giving us a superb presentation, and we'll thank her by loudly chanting 3 times, Hari Bol. our heartfelt gratitude to you, Mataji. Thank you. Okay, quickly few announcements. First of all, we would like to welcome all those girls who come for the Chetna very first time. Can you just stand at your own places? Just stand. Wow, so many of y'all. Okay. So, we welcome all these girls in our traditional style by loudly chanting three times. Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. We pray at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Ji that today's day be an auspicious beginning in your Krishna consciousness, and you please, please, please keep coming so that we can serve you well, and we and people like her can inspire you. So please do not forget to collect your gifts which is there near Harshali. Harshali? Yeah, so she has your return gifts. So please give your passes which has been given to you. Just give it to her and collect your gifts. You all can sit. We have few books which are really nice. Reading is a good habit, right? So if you can just, a small book, a thinner one.